The first bill up this morning, public hearing, is House Bill 3083. Open a public hearing. Representative Avakian, okay, good.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, committee members. I will give you a very brief introduction of House Bill 3083. I've got two witnesses here, and when we get to them, I'll let them introduce themselves. House Bill 3083 simply clarifies the role of the Department of Forestry and other authorities and the role of news reporting agencies at the place of a fire, oftentimes a forest fire. The reason for the bill and the need for the clarification is just that when reporters and cameramen get to a fire site, oftentimes there are restricted zones, and clarity is needed in order to determine when it's an appropriate time for the reporting agencies to go into these restricted zones in order to report on the fire. Now, you have in front of you the original bill, and you have a dash one amendment. The best way for you to view this is if you take the original bill and ignore all of it, and simply take the amendment and put it into Section 1, Subsection 2. So the amendment is really the change to the statute. And what it says is that a news organization may enter a fire zone in order to report as long as they are not unreasonably interfering with firefighting operations.
Okay, any questions? Please go ahead.
Oh, I'm first?
Yep.
My name is Eric Nordquist. I'm what's in the industry called a stringer out of Portland, Oregon. I've covered about 1,000 stories in the last 4 years. This bill would bring clarity. We sometimes have to negotiate our way to places that it would seem obvious to the general public that the news media should belong at, yet when we first arrive, we have to sometimes deal with people who don't really know how to interact with us, don't understand that we aren't, you know, there to cause problems. We're just there to observe and do our thing and pretty much leave. This covers both parties. This gives language that the fire people understand that we do have a purpose for gathering and disseminating information that of events that take place in public view, while also giving them the authority to exclude us if we are engaged in unreasonable activity on the scenes. That's pretty much what I want to say.
Good morning, Mr. Chair. My name is Gino Corridore. I work for K2 News. I'm based out of the Capitol here, so you might have seen me around. I've been working in Oregon since November 2003, and one of the incidents that have made me believe that there is a gray area when we're covering these news stories, I'm a news photographer, is I was at a scene last 4th of July out in Amity, and there was a tanker fire. And when I arrived at the scene, I came to 22 and 99, that intersection there, and an ODOT employee told me to wait on the side of the road for a public information officer from the state police to allow me access to the scene. And they said, eventually the state police officer said that it was for my safety to not go up there. And we were not allowed access to the scene for several hours, and Eric was there with me, and by the time we were up there, the fire had been put out, and when we later on it was learned that there was general public allowed to sort of walk around the scene, but we were kept away. And so this gray area, when we come to the front lines of what's going on, we, out of respect to the police officers and respect for what they do, we sort of obey and do what they tell us to do, but we feel that it's not quite clear why they're telling us that we can't go in there.
If I can chime in here, this is very similar language that some other states use, and it's worked out pretty well for them so far. And it's it, it, pretty much puts it in statutory language that there is a purpose for news media to be present. A lot of times they default to, the people that we first interact with, they default to keep this news guy where I can see him. And oftentimes that can be a half mile, three quarters of a mile away from viable locations. I was restricted from a scene 2 weeks ago where I was actually three quarters of a mile away from where the actual location was of the actual incident, and all I wanted to be able to do was get on top of an overpass so I could get a line of sight to see what was going on much farther down the road, and I wasn't able to go up there. And it's one of those things where I didn't want to have a crisis right there. And if we have some clarity, then we have something that we can refer to say, there's a purpose for the news media to be present at events that take place in public view.
If I may, Mr. Chair, the amendment is carefully crafted so that the authorities have the ability to control their scene when they need to. The amendment was crafted in coordination with the Department of Forestry, who at a fire zone, especially the forest fires, are generally the ones in the position of authority. And so it was crafted along with them. They have no objection to the amendment or to the bill. The bill was also crafted in consultation with the fire chiefs and the firefighters, who also have no opposition to the bill or the amendment.
Okay. And this only applies to firefighters, so that it does not apply to police crime scenes?
Okay. It applies to any situation in which ORS 162.255 would apply, and that section, our statute specifically, refers to assistance in firefighting operations.
Okay. Any further questions?
No.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
And next, Mike Dagzul. Dave Fiskum and Charlie Stone, please.
Good morning, Chair Barker. For the record, my name is Mike Deichsel. I'm the Director of Forest Protection for the Oregon Forest Industries Council here in Salem. My statement that I've sent up to you there was basically crafted before I was aware of the Dash 1 amendments, so take that into consideration. I believe from the landowner's point of view, I think we all agree that there's an exceptional value for the news media out there reporting on current situations, keeping the news-hungry public up to date on what's going on, fire prevention messages, points of caution, evacuations. We all agree that there's a real need for real-time data out there. But, like I say, in the original form, I thought the bill went a little bit too far. The firefighters are out there trying to suppress the fire with trained individuals that they work very closely with and know their movements. And potentially there could be some unintended consequences of the media out there in a position where fire managers not knowing their location and specific strategies such as a burnout or incoming retardant drop could put those folks in jeopardy. And so that was our concern there. And I believe it was mentioned in the previous testimony that there are information officers assigned to fire incidents, and I think they do an excellent job from my point of view. I realize that timing sometimes doesn't facilitate getting the story out quickly, but I think those folks make themselves available. They try and coordinate qualified interviews. They try to give them positions where they can actually get some visual to show out to the media, and I think that all happens currently without those inclusions to the bill. I think a couple other points that were concern to me is that under Section 2, Subsection 2, the changes there basically, I know well intended, could potentially keep a landowner that happened to live within a restricted area from even access to their home unless they were only going to suppress a fire or do some prevention work. There are people that live out there sometimes within those regulated areas, and that verbiage that was suggested in the original bill could limit access to homeowners actually to their property. And then I believe under Section 2.3 actually was probably not likely intended, but basically I think that one has the literal interpretation that would allow news media out there to potentially trespass on private property. And I think that, once again, goes hand in hand with their locations being known to fire managers as well as the private landowner not necessarily granting access to their property, and those concern me. I believe that with the dash ones now that I've seen, I think most of those have been addressed. So I'll be glad to answer any questions.
Okay, so can you sum up where you are in this then? Is it
like I say, I apologize, I was not aware of the dash ones until I walked in this morning. I believe with the deletion of 16 through 26, which basically eliminates the section 2 there, as well as up in 1 where it's limited to 162.255, the elimination of its references to Chapter 477 I'm fine with, which I think I'm basically okay with it as is, but I was not in the original bill.
Okay. Any questions? Okay, thank you.
Good morning, Chair Barker, members of the committee. My name is Charlie Stone. I'm a projects director for the Fire Protection Program with the Department of Forestry. I want to speak to you just very briefly. Representative Avakian mentioned that we did have some concerns with the bill as it was initially drafted, and they stem from the fact that we have two primary interests out on a wildfire scene. That's the suppressing the fire, of course, and maintaining the safety of the public and our firefighters. And a wildland fire scene is very different than, say, a tanker accident or a structural fire, in that it can cover thousands of acres. Aside from vehicle accidents and other health problems of firefighters, the majority of firefighters that are killed in wildland firefighting, and thankfully that hasn't occurred much in Oregon, is from folks that are away from the fire's edge and not aware of what the fire is doing, and the fire blows up and can travel incredible distances in a very short time, overruns the folks. They don't see it coming because they don't know what to watch for. We have an acronym that we call LCES, Lookouts, Communications, Escape Routes, and Safety Zones. Communication is absolutely essential on a fire. We have everybody tied together through an operational sense, and we know where people are, and when we think something's going to happen to blow up, we pull the folks out of there, we get them out of the way. When folks are out wandering around on their own, we don't know they're there. It's a tremendous safety hazard. So that's our concern in restricting a fire scene, not trying to hide the news or anything like that. Want that to be understood. My written testimony outlines a lot of the concerns with the bill, but as Representative Avakian stated, we've worked with them to craft those amendments, and if the Dash 1 amendments replace the bill, we have no opposition to House Bill 3083. Be happy to answer questions.
Okay. Any questions? No? Okay, thank you very much.
Thank you.
So I have Dave Biscom signed up.
He's sitting right here, Mr. Chair.
Look at where you were. You moved.
I moved.
Your camouflage there.
Mr. Chair, committee members, for the record, Dave Fiska. I'm here representing the Oregon Association of Broadcasters, an association of 200 radio and television stations throughout this state. I'll be very brief this morning by indicating that we are also in support of the Dash 1 amendments to House Bill 3083. We believe that the amendment as drafted provides media, reporters, editors, camera persons with appropriate access to a fire. The balancing test is there, and I would applaud Representative Avakian for working out the details of this over the last weeks. We understand that, and I think your testimony reflects that at the moment there's no opposition to the bill, and we would lend our support to it as well. So thank you. I'd be happy to answer questions if I can.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you.
Mr. Chair, I think that's all the testimony that we have. We would appreciate a moving of the dash ones and a work session, if you will. Thank you.
Thank you. Close the public hearing and open a work session.
Mr. Chair, I move the dash one amendments into House Bill 3083.
Are there any objections? Hearing none, so ordered.
Mr. Chair, I move House Bill 3083 as amended to the full committee with a due pass recommendation.
Representative
McPherson?
Aye.
Representative
Olson? Aye.
Representative
Thacker?
Aye.
Chair Barker?
Aye.
And Representative McPherson. Open a public hearing on 3341. Steve Dole and Ms. Schwab.
Good
hearing.
Morning, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Steve Dole with Crime Victims United of Oregon. And I have with me Marianne Schwab, for whom we requested this bill, who will give you her testimony. House Bill 3341 will provide protection and choice for witnesses and direct victims of crime who use the 9/11 emergency system to report crimes and seek help. This bill was first introduced in the 71st legislative session by Representative March. It was approved in the House on a 55-0 vote, only to die in the Senate. During the 72nd legislative session, the bill was filed again but did not make it to committee. We're grateful to both Representative Krieger and Chair Barker for his willingness to assign this bill to committee and hold this hearing. We're also grateful to those who wrote many letters of support for House Bill 3341. I want to quote and give you an example of one of those letters written by Deborah Stewart of Portland, who could not be here this morning. This bill, when passed, hits home the point that news media has a responsibility not only to their listeners, but also to the victims and their families, those who are most affected. News media can tell the story without the 9/11 call specifics that boost their ratings without consideration of the impact of what the media does to those who are affected. And that is why this bill should be approved. Crime Victims United agrees. In a crime situation, shock sets in quickly, and there is, of course, a lot of trauma, needless to say, around the event. And it is a replay of that trauma that goes on when people hear those words are repeated in the media, on the television, and on the radio. This bill gives these people a choice as to whether they want to sign off and have that replayed. We appreciate, again, your time and consideration on this bill, and I'm going to turn this over to Marianne. We thank you for your consideration, and we ask you to pass House Bill 3341 to the House for its approval.
Thank you. My name is Marianne Schwab. I'm from Portland, Oregon, and I'm here to represent myself and young people. As a retired secretary, I have worked years and years with families, and I'm aware of many, many traumas. Those of us living in Multnomah County are privileged to have highly skilled professionals working for 911 call centers and for the Trauma Intervention Program, known as TIP, volunteers who often buffer family members in those critical moments after hearing a death notification. There is nothing more painful on earth than for a parent to bury their child. Most recently, in Washington County, a young child was hiding in a closet using a cell phone to call 911 after a loved one was murdered. Again in Washington County, just prior to winter break 2 years ago, a father beat his wife in front of his children. That's a felony. Yet the mother's 911 call was broadcast on the evening news, only to have their children face questions from their peers in classes the following day. Children have feelings, too. For me, this all started 6th of February, 1999, while reading the newspaper and listening to the radio. A dog broke loose from a fenced yard, pushed an 8-year-old boy riding his bike home from school. The dog went for the boy's throat and would not let go. The incident took place on Monday. The boy died on Wednesday. On the Saturday, the day of his funeral, KXL Radio aired his babysitter's 911 call, screaming at the dispatcher for instructions how to stop the bleeding. Yes, broadcast three times between 7:30 a.m. and 8 a.m. newscast. The KXL producer stopped the broadcasting of that 911 call at my request. The rest is history. Remember, it passed the House 55-5 in 2001. It did not get assigned to a committee in 2003. This is simply a statewide housekeeping matter. House Bill 3341 will bring all 36 counties and a total of 50 public safety access points to compliance with procedures used in Multnomah County, where the 911 caller must give approval to the 911 administration prior to their releasing his or her voice to be broadcast in the evening news. House Bill 3341 is truly nonpartisan. It protects the most precious unit of measure in our community, the individual family unit. It is my understanding House Bill 3341 will not need state's general fund to implement. Management working for 911 call centers report that they do not want any 911 caller voices broadcast in that their dispatchers and 911 responders relive the same ordeal. Their jobs are difficult enough without forcing them to relive painful events. Intrusive on so many levels. Listening to 911 callers' voices puts all parties back to the point of pain within 1/20th of a second and brings on post-traumatic stress. The 911 responders, the firehouse crews, the police officers, ambulance paramedic teams, hospital emergency staff, the shock survivors on the most painful day of their lives, especially when their loved one dies. Most important, according to Multnomah County District Attorney Michael Schrunk, should the case go to trial, broadcasting the 911 caller's voice compromises potential jury members. Citizens have a constitutional right to a fair trial by a jury of their peers. I appreciate Representative Wayne Krueger and Chair Representative Barker's willingness to grant this hearing today, and to all citizens, those who have written letters of support for House Bill 3341. In a friendly, helpful way, Mr. Krueger suggested I solicit the community and like-minded organizations with the same passion to write letters of support. What I'm finding is that nonprofits either cannot or will not lobby for any bill for fear of losing their funding, or worse, get asked to help on additional bills. As for his suggesting that crime victims or compassionate friends invite victims to testify in support of House Bill 3341, Mr. Doyle and I felt that would be cruel and heartless for all parties, including those of you serving on this Judiciary Committee. We would be asking victims to do just what the media did, to relive the same trauma that forced them to call 911 in the first place. We trust you agree that House Bill 3341 is simply a housekeeping matter and that you will forward it to the House for approval. Respectfully submitted. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Mr. Chair, I might also add that Pete Shepard, this bill goes forward. Pete Shepard wanted me to, from the Attorney General's office, wanted me to notify you that they have some technical amendments to the bill that they would submit.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Dave Fiskum.
Good morning again, Mr. Chair, committee members. For the record, Dave Fiskum here representing the Oregon Association of Broadcasters. As I indicated in the previous hearing, the association consists of 200 radio and television stations throughout the state. We come here today to oppose House Bill 3341 because we do not believe it is necessary to add provisions preventing access to 911 tapes to Oregon's public records law. As the previous witness testified, we have faced similar legislation in past sessions, and from that period of several years ago to the present, in my representation of the OAB, I have not been made aware directly of problems with the use of 911 tapes by media outlets in Oregon, problems or excesses, if you will, that would warrant this approach to abridging access, nor did we have any contact with the individuals who are sponsoring this legislation or encouraging its introduction before today. I've spent the last few minutes trying to read the submission to you earlier, and I'm not prepared today to provide detail on the points made in that testimony, nor to dispute that testimony. I'd be pleased to get more information about the particular instances that the testimony cites. Our general proposition for your consideration today is that managers of radio and television stations in Oregon are well able to police themselves with regard to the use of 911 tapes. They have demonstrated the ability in the past, we believe, to use appropriate discretion and can't be counted on to do so in the future under the current provisions of Oregon's public records law. Further, we believe that the public interest is best served by assuring access to 911 tapes for reporters and editors of both broadcast and print media outlets. My colleague from the Oregon Newspaper Publishers Association would like to have been here today, but is in a different hearing on the first floor of the Capitol this morning. In many cases, the media has used access to 911 tapes to judge the efficiency and effectiveness of 911 centers in this state, which by and large operate very effectively and efficiently, in my judgment. On occasion, there have been problems with such operation, and the reporters in those instances have played a key role in spurring accountability of those government operations. So, in sum, Mr. Chair, committee members, we would encourage you not to act on this bill. However, if you do decide to move ahead, I did want to make one suggestion with regard to the language of the current House Bill 3341. That language would be, and I don't have an amendment for you today to propose, but would be on page 5, lines 7, 8. It appears again later on in the bill. Where this language is repeated. This is the only section in the language that appears to give the media access to 911 tapes. If media are persons, and I'm going to presume they are, we would advocate adding a time frame to this access, namely 24 hours, to assure that if you move in this direction, that transcripts of 911 tapes are, in fact, available for media review in a timely fashion, as well as at no cost or perhaps cost associated simply with the transcription. With that, Mr. Chair, I'll stop. Be pleased to try to answer questions if I can about House Bill 3341. Thank you.
Hey, so if I'm hearing kind of your conceptual amendment would be that that you would be agreeable to wait up to 24 hours if you couldn't get a hold of the person or so on. And
Mr. Chair, yes. There's no magic to 24. To be honest with you, I have not discussed 24 hours with the operators of 911 centers, and I believe the representative of those centers is in the room today. And so I use 24 as an example of what would strike us as being reasonable as opposed to, and not suggesting this would be the case, but 2 weeks or 1 week or several days. Some quick access so that you can actually gain access to the transcript. If this is a direction in which you choose to move, we would find a way here or somewhere to propose such an amendment.
Okay. Any further questions?
Well, as I'm sitting here listening to testimony from both sides, I'm hearing that the problem is with the broadcasting of the actual voices. I'm wondering, maybe I should be talking to Steve Dole and Marianne, but I'm wondering if you had the actual audio yourself, and you made your own transcript, but you know it would be available to you immediately that way, but you just would refrain from broadcasting it. Would that be something that would be suitable? No? I'm seeing waves from Mary. I'm just wondering, it just seems like...
I can answer that question, but you may want to direct it to that.
I don't know.
Well,
I'm just trying to get information here.
You give my answer, but Steve, and you...
Rephrase your question.
Well, part of my concern was that there would be a delay in getting this information to the media, and I could see that they would need to know what's going on. It's something that's occurring, and a transcript might be delayed. So if they had access to the broadcast but or to the actual audio, but didn't broadcast it, they would have that information. They could relay it at least through their own words rather than...
My response to them having quick access, and mind you, with all the CAD systems, it's a turn of a button and they hear it anyway, just like those that monitor 911 calls with police. My concern is that they would use it and then beg forgiveness later. An example I'll use is when helicopters were in the air at a standoff in Portland, where the person trapped in the house could watch exactly where all the police officers were. We lost a police officer. And it's just a tap on the wrist is a fine. Fining someone $10,000 for breaking the rule is like taking a dime out of somebody's piggy bank. I do not trust the media. They do not need the caller's voice on the airwaves. That's all we ask. They have the information. It is not hidden from them. It's not behind closed doors. If there is a murder involved, a suicide involved, there may be a delay with the transcript because it's under investigation. Again, to go through trial, you want to have that information protected somewhat until it's released through proper channels. The public's right to know is there.
Mr. Chair, Representative Thatcher, try to answer your question this way. Instinctively, the association I represent is opposed to any attempt to abridge Oregon's public records law. This is an attempt to do so. It impedes access to something that's now available.
So we instinctively oppose that. We deal with public records law issues in this building 20 or 30 times in a legislative session, along with my colleagues on the print side. At the same time, we understand the questions involved. We understand the judgment that's necessary in the actual use of a voice. As I say, I think our record, but the witness to my right has suggested that there are problems with that, and I'd be pleased to look into those. I am unaware of those up to this moment. My experience is that the persons who manage broadcast outlets in this state use good judgment the majority of the time. Thus, we oppose any attempt to abridge Oregon's public records law. At the same time, if you choose to move in this direction, I have at least suggested one approach that is designed to amend this bill in a way that guarantees timely access to at least the information associated with the 911 tapes. I should add just a brief comment with regard to the helicopter issue in Portland, which has been an issue, and some of you are familiar with that. I haven't checked into that for some weeks now, but basically there has been a collaborative judgment reached among media and law enforcement agencies in the Portland area about the potential intrusion of helicopters to avoid that, so that you don't have the kinds of instances, at least in the main, that are referred to. And that's been a collaborative venture among the media and law enforcement in the Portland area, where, of course, most of the helicopters are.
Okay, and there's nothing that requires the 911 centers to produce a transcript. Is that correct? Not correct in that. I mean, we don't have. They probably do it, but there's nothing, and this bill doesn't address that. So,
Mr. Chair, I guess my answer to that question would be that I'm sure that under Oregon law, such transcripts are in fact matters of public record. One may need to go through some process, as is typical of many public records acquisition attempts, to gain access to the records. But usually, those records are in fact defined to be matters of public record, and if there are to be exemptions, those need to meet the tests in the law, which this bill prints.
Okay. Thank you. Any further questions? Representative McPherson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Fiskin, does the industry have any established and written down set of standards that it sets for itself that would guide the conduct of the different member organizations?
Mr. Chair, Representative McPherson, to my knowledge, no. There may be some. There may be some at individual stations. There may be some that I'm unaware of. I'd be pleased to check on that more specifically to answer your question, but I am unaware of and can't remember from the past times when 911 bills have been in this capital that there have been the existence of such actual written standards. It's a judgment call that managers of stations make every day who run news operations.
I'd like to add one more story. It was a judgment call when there was a high-speed chase from south of the state all the way to Portland, and there was a young woman, 16, in the car. The reporter said, "We will not identify the woman's name because she's underage," but where was the camera showing her in the back seat of the car? Just recently, there was a gun incident. It was a toy at Franklin High School, and where was the camera? But right behind the student, the officer and his mother walking towards the school. These, again, are judgment calls. I think you're right, Representative Barker and McPherson. We do need to address not only the guidelines for this bill, but maybe how the media portrays our news. Oftentimes, those helicopters show car accidents, and we see the family, the members recognize it before the death notification is even noticed. This is huge. This 911 bill is only to stop my voice, the panic, screaming for directions without being broadcast on the evening news. That's all this does. Thank you.
Thank you. I think we've all seen examples of when they've had some of those 911 tapes that are just, you know, chilling, and you can imagine I can only imagine the effect that would have on the family. We have this scheduled for Thursday, and because of some technical things, Dave, I'd ask you if you would talk with Mr. Dole and see if we can't come to some resolution on this that might be able, both parties might be able to agree on.
Thank you.
With that, I close the public hearing. And open a work session on 23. 3316. Ms. Moore.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. We first heard House Bill 2316 on May 5th. This bill, as you may recall, the amendments were a gut and stuff set of amendments. There were two things that those amendments were attempting to accomplish. The first section dealt with changes to the predatory sex offender designation laws as a response to the Oregon Supreme Court's holding in February of this year. The second section would allow community notification in the cases of Class A felony sex offenses. The committee seemed there was some testimony in opposition to the second section. Mr. Schreiner, I see, is here today and was going to essentially come back and let the committee know what had occurred at the annual meeting of the community corrections officers. I would note that in the interim, I did request -2 amendments that would only gut and stuff the bill and replace it with the predatory sex offender fix, because I wasn't certain how the committee would feel about the community notification piece. So is someone here from Ms. Barnett's office? Is Monica Thompson here, or?
Marcia Thompson.
Marcia Thompson, thank you. So I guess we'll ask Mr. Schreiner to come up and let us know what was discussed at the meeting.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Chair Barker and members of the committee, I was at the...
You said identify yourself.
I'm sorry. Pat Schreiner with the Marion County Sheriff's Office. I'm the commander of the Parole and Probation Division, and I'm representing the Oregon Association of Community Corrections Directors and the Sex Offender Supervision Network. A couple weeks ago, I was here testifying on this bill, and one of the issues that was raised was a lack of standardization around the state relative to community notification. I acknowledge that that was an issue and that we were addressing that at the Oregon Association of Community Corrections Directors meeting last week. We did discuss this in detail on May 12th, and we have appointed a work group committee that I am going to head with members of the Sex Offender Supervision Network. We meet for the first time next Tuesday, May 24th. We did come to one of the big pieces that we discussed was that there should be some at least minimum standards on how notification is conducted on your most high-risk, predatory, dangerous sex offenders. And one thing we did get all 36 counties that were there to buy off on is that it would be reasonable and prudent for all counties to have a predatory website. Who exactly goes on the website and how that would be done can depend on the county. But the issue would be that the most high-risk, dangerous sex offenders who are not cooperating with treatment, who regardless of what is going on, everybody agrees is a great risk, should be on those websites. So that is at least step one, but there are significant details to work out, and we will be meeting next week on that. If you have any other specific questions, I'd be happy to answer them at this time.
Did you, Mr. Turner, did you talk to anyone from the Lincoln County District Attorney's Office in the intervening couple of weeks we've had here, or anyone from Representative Crummell's office about the Section 2 and the -1 amendments?
No, I did not talk to anybody about Section 2.
Okay. Thank you.
I would continue to object to Section 2.
No, I understand that. I just had some people calling me, and I instructed them that they ought to contact you and discuss with you some of the issues that came up, so I was just curious if anyone did.
Okay. Chair Barker and members of the committee, one other piece of information I did gather was a study from the Center for Sex Offender Management out of Colorado on community notification. And sometimes you get so busy working and dealing with all of the issues, you don't even realize where you stand nationally. And in this study, it listed Oregon as one of the top five states in the country in regards to how they conduct and handle community notification.
Okay. Any questions?
Thank you.
Are you done? Are you
out of
questions?
No, I'm done. Okay. I just... Don wrote from Commonwealth probably about this too, but they didn't say anything to you about him on it. Okay.
So we've got a situation where we have a consensus that everybody seems to think Section 1 is okay, and Section 2 hasn't been lobbied to us, which is really looked down because everybody's really pushed in Section 2.
Okay.
I'm in Section 1.
Or you mean the dash two amendment?
Okay,
got it.
Okay, we're in work session. So, Mr. Chair, I move the dash two amendments into House Bill 2316.
Any objections? Hearing none, so ordered.
Mr. Chair, I move House Bill 2316 as amended to the floor with the due pass, or to the full committee with a due pass recommendation.
On the roll, please.
Representative McPherson?
Aye.
Representative Olson?
Aye.
Representative
Backus?
Aye.
Chair Barker?
Aye.
And I'll carry that one. Okay. We're going to jump down. Representative Cromwell is, wants to be here for 2335, and he's tied up, so we're going to go on down to 2510. Open a work session.
Mr. Chair and members of the committee, we first had a hearing on this back in March. This was the bill that would add the UPC labels and forged receipts to the forgery statutes. And the original bill simply stated that if you possessed any amount of those types of items, it was a forgery in the first degree, a felony. It created a new crime of aggravated forgery in the first degree. And we heard testimony at that time from members of the OCDLA expressing some concern because most other types of forgeries are value-based. After having a couple of work groups and after attempting to craft some statutory language that would get to a value and assessing a value, everyone, including OCDLA, sort of agreed that assessing a value was a pretty difficult thing to do. And so the OCDLA and the Associated Oregon Industries and I worked on these Dash 1 amendments, which basically add to forgery in the first degree, if the person has 15 or more of those items, then that would be forgery 1. Any amount less than that is just forgery in the second degree, and forgery in the second degree does not need to be amended because it already is just any written instrument that is a false written instrument. And so that is the compromise that we worked out. Does anyone have any questions for me about the change?
Well, Mr. Chair, I'd move then that Dash 1 amendments be moved into House Bill 2510.
Any objections? Hearing none, so ordered.
I'd move House Bill 2510 to the full committee for with due pass recommendation.
Representative McPherson?
Aye.
Representative Olson?
Aye.
Representative Thatcher?
Aye.
Chair Barker?
Aye. And Representative Olson? Carry. Open a work session on House Bill 2792.
Are we? I don't know that we need to take any testimony. I assume we're both. We're good? Okay. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, this we first heard in April. This was the court security bill, and then there was the inclusion, or court security, and then emergency preparedness bill, and the inclusion of the justices of the peace into the Committee on Court Security. We merged those two bills into 2792. There were some concerns about the way that counties would be able to afford paying for the paying for the report, the accounting report. And so the dash two amendments have been worked out with LC, with Honorable Judge Lipscomb, and with Mr. Snyder from the counties. Dash two amendments are good to go. Everyone has signed off on them, and so those are the amendments that I would ask the committee to consider adopting today.
Okay. Mr. Chair, I move the dash two amendments into House Bill 2792.
Are there any objections? Hearing none, so ordered.
Mr. Chair, I move House Bill 2792 as amended to the full committee with a due pass recommendation.
Representative McPherson?
Aye.
Representative Wilson?
Aye.
Representative Thatcher?
Aye.
Chair Barker?
Aye.
And Representative McPherson. Carry that one. We're going to stand at ease for a few minutes, and if you would call them, be here in the 35, we have the dash 5 amendments.
Yes, Mr. Chair and members of the committee, the dash 5 amendments, as I understand, were the product of a work group including DAs, law enforcement representatives, and members of Representative Crummell's office. I believe that all of the interested parties are on board with the dash 5 amendments.
Okay, and just in case I said hearing, I meant work session.
Thank you.
Okay. Good. Mr. Chair, I'd move then the dash 5 amendments to House Bill 2335.
Any objections? Hearing none, so ordered.
And then I would move House Bill 2335 to the full committee with a due pass recommendation.
Representative McPherson?
Aye.
Representative Olson?
Aye.
Representative Thatcher?
Aye.
Chair Barker?
Aye.
And Representative Thatcher can carry it to the full committee, but we'll probably have Representative Crummell carry it to the floor.
Okay.
Any further business to come before us today? Adjourned.
Well.